degree, two minor, and you're done. These are something you can also do in your practice, which I'll talk about practicing later. But learn your numbers. It will open up everything for you because you'll start seeing patterns. You'll see the pattern of how a song is written. Oh, this song, like every other praise song, is a 1-4-5 with occasionally a 6, other than having to memorize each chord that's in this song, which is really painful. In addition, you'll be able to learn a common language with other musicians. It doesn't really matter what instrument they play. If it's not a C instrument, if they speak numbers, you speak numbers, it doesn't matter what key you're in. Or the vocalist says, I have a cold. I need to drop this a minor third. And you're like, great. Now everybody has to transpose. Well, it doesn't really, if you know the numbers, you don't have to transpose and you just kind of work through. The other side of learning numbers is it teaches you to hear what a 2 sounds like in any scale. So like a two is like a lifting note, generally. Oh, let's say we'll play a 1. So this is what a 1. So play a C chord. So a very home type note. It's not going anywhere, not very fancy. So stay on that C chord. Okay, that's not a very home note. That's a 2. But it doesn't really matter what key I'm in. If I know what a 2 sounds like, I can associate that all 2s create lift, or all 4s create lift. All 3s and 5s are home notes, like they're part of a chord. So learning your numbers teaches you to create certain emotions for the chord. We'll go back to chordal theory here in just a moment. So that's why you learn your numbers. Any questions on numbers or why you learn your numbers? Anybody? Okay. I know I'm moving fast. I'm just trying to put this all in 75 minutes and then get to the fun stuff, which is playing. Okay, learning how to spell chords. All right, so who here could spell a chord? Like when they see a chart, they see all the notes in the chord, and it's like, it's not a thinking process to spell it out. It's just like looking at a word. Yep, okay, so there's a few, and some don't. All right, if you can't spell your chords, and you're just an ear player, you can generally hear your way through. But the flip side of that is if you get a really difficult chart that has a lot of changes that moves outside of the key, a lot of times you end up kind of struggling. And knowing how to spell your chords can kind of get you through. I have them written down there. So a major chord is the 1-3-5. So just to give a very quick demo. So C, D, E, F, G, A, and B is the 1-2-3-4-5-6-7. So a major chord just grabs the 1-3 and the 5. So you got C, E, G. And I'm obviously picking a very easy key just for time's sake. So most of you would know how to, a lot of you would know how to spell a C chord. But when you got to like a D flat major 9, you might go, oh, let me think about that. And you might take a little bit longer to get to your D flat, F, A flat, C. If you're having to think while you're playing, you're not going to get there. You're not going to be working through a chart that you're not used to and be able to play the note that you want to play if you can't spell that chord quickly. So minor chord, C, E flat, G. So you're flatting the third. So when you see that flat 3, you're just taking that 3 and you're bringing it down a half step. Dominant 7. So we said we'd talk about this one again. So C, E, G, and you're flatting the 7, which is a B. So you're going to get a B flat. Okay. So can you bring up the volume just a little bit? So when you hear that chord, that means it's got to go somewhere. The dominant 7 is a really common Western civilization type chord. It always goes somewhere, unless you're in the blues, and it always stays in dominant 7s. When I see a dominant 7 chord, I instantly assess what key I'm in by the circle of fifths. If I see a D7, I know my scales are going to fall within the key of G, or G minor, it really depends. But I'm in the fifth of some sort of G. Most commonly, you're just in a key of G. So like what I'll hear a lot of soloists do is they'll get a chord chart that says like C, F, C7, right? So we know this is not in the key of C. How do we know that? Well, if you know your chord, you'll know that A7 is an A, C sharp, E, G, and there's no C sharps in the key of C. Absolutely none. So you have to know what key you're in to play this A7 or to solo over top of it or play a scale. So for me, as soon as I see that A7, my circle of fifths tells me I'm in the key of D and I'm done. It's no big deal. And that's normally going to resolve to some sort of D minor or something, but that doesn't matter. I know I'm in the key of D and I can solo over that D scale. So that's another reason. Know your circle of fifths. You see that dominant chord, you're done. You know what key you're in. You know if there's a change within the key, just briefly, you're not going to completely demolish your solo and play something that the worship leader goes. Because you'll play a C natural if you stay in the key of C, and that would be not good. Major 7, minor 7. So 1-3-5-7. So major 7 is C, E, G, V. Minor 7, C, E flat, G, B flat. Yeah, okay, yep, yeah, all right. So 1-3-5, C, E, G. Minor is 1, flat 3, and 5. And this is all in your notes section. It kind of gives you the numbers. I'm just kind of writing them out in name form. So your dominant would be 1-3-5, and then flat 7. Your major would be 1-3-5-7. And then your minor 7 is 1, flat 3, 5, flat 7. I'm going kind of fast. I know this is not meant for you to internalize it right now. This is so that when you go home and we go through some of the practicing things, that you could pick through and actually write out chords and arpeggiate them and start to get to where you learn them very, very quickly. So I apologize if this is rushing. Again, the 75 minutes thing is quite the time constraint to cover all. All right. The diminished will be as 1, flat 3, flat 5. I've written it as 6. All you purists here, I know that it's flat 7. I don't want to write it that way. I just want to write 6. So that would be C, E flat, which is your flat 3, G flat, which is flat 5, and then A. That gives you a diminished chord. Augmented chords will go 1, 3, and then sharp 5. And then a sus chord. Sus chords are funny. You see the little sus on the chord chart, and you go, well, what is it? You know, and that really depends. It can be a sus 2, or it can be a sus 4. The only thing I would say is you don't put the 3 in there. So a sus 2 would be like C, which is 1, D, which is 2, and then 5. Or a sus 4 would be C, which is 1, F, which is 4, and G, which is 5. Okay. Any questions, additions on chords? I know that was fast. It may be boring for some, but we just we gotta. If you don't know your chords, I would encourage you to learn them all and start applying them to your ear reading, your ear playing, or your chord reading. Yes. Yep, I got a section on that. Okay. Yep. Yes. If you're not playing what's on the chart, that can make it kind of tough, and that should be something you discuss with the worship leader about what you're doing so you can adjust your chart. Okay. All right, teaching your ear. All right, by show of hands, I know I'm doing this show of hands thing a lot. Who knows their intervals by ear? Like they could say perfect fourth, perfect fifth, perfect sixth, ascending, descending. So starting to see less hands. Okay. A lot of people don't, and that's fine. This is, play a perfect fourth for me. Okay, this is Here Comes the Bride. Here comes the bride, okay? So it's a perfect fourth, and you know that it's if you're on a C, that the next one is an F, and all you're doing is training your ear to hear intervals and not hear, if you have to have your instrument in your hand to hear what the next note is, that's great. But you can fine-tune your ear just by learning every single interval. So how do you do this? I've given you a list of songs that discuss like Jaws theme, okay? So minor second. And go way down low. Right, so that's a minor second. Anytime you hear that Jaws theme, kind of, you're listening to a minor second. Why is that important? If you're on a C sharp and you hear that interval, as you train your ear, you'll know that that's going up to a D. It's a minor second. That's not a very common interval necessarily, but it may be something you work through. Again, I've just listed some songs. Somewhere Over the Rainbow is an easy one. Somewhere is an octave, and you just learn to start hearing octaves. So how do you do that? There are great apps if you have an iPhone on ear training that teach you intervals, and it just kind of takes. I did this for a while because I was like 18 and we didn't have iPhones. I had like a tape deck, and I would record intervals and learn. If you do college work, who in here has done like college work in music? How much of this did you do? A reasonable amount. It's awful, right? It's awful, but it's fantastic. And it does something for your ear that you cannot do just by picking your instrument up and noodling around. Okay. All right. That's enough of this. So, I haven't used one in a long time. I know they're out there. There's fantastic ear trainer apps. Sorry. There you go. Yep. Right. Yeah, and all it does is it plays an interval, and you have to guess what it is. And you're not going to do this. You're not going to do this Sunday morning like you're guessing intervals. All you're doing is fine-tuning your ear, so you don't have to guess anymore. It becomes something you know. Is anybody in here have perfect pitch? Yep, that guy raises his hand all the time. He should probably teach the class. I have relative pitch. I don't have perfect pitch, so I have to kind of know what the first note is. But generally, I know what the next note is. And for those of you who took a reasonable amount of after high school education, you can probably guess what the next 12 notes are. And that does wonderful things for your ear. Okay. All right. Let's talk about how to grow as a soloist. Just talking about some of the things we've talked about. And the reason why I talked about this is because I couldn't really talk about how to practice without talking through some of the theory. Okay. I view as being a musician more like being an athlete. Because I think it's a closer vision of what you have to do to become better than just being the guy who noodles around, because that's our tendency. But if you think about a football player, he doesn't just go play football 5 days a week in order to become better. That wouldn't do him any good. But that's what we do. We go and practice songs 5 days a week or 2 days a week or on Sunday morning, and you're just not going to grow that way. So I did that for a long time. I would just learn songs, and that was it. And that's great. It's a lot more fun than what I'm about to tell you. But it's only going to get you so far, and you're probably going to kind of stagnate after a while. So here's what I suggest. Have a plan, just like you would if you were planning to become an athlete, like an Olympic runner. You would have a plan, and you would do things besides just run 26 miles a day. The first thing I suggest is mental practice. If it's been a while since you've gone through the circle of fifths or the number system, I still do it. It's still helpful for me, even though I have them internalized, to go through the numbers and just call them out. I will say out the circle of fifths. I'll say them backwards. I'll say it forwards. You can do that driving down the road. So this doesn't have to be during your practice time, but make it a conscious effort to do your circle of fifths a couple of times a day if you don't have them down yet, right? If you do, move on to something else. There are ways to practice your brain without an instrument. Practice the number system. Pick a key a week and know all the numbers of it and just be able to call it out. If you're married, have your wife call out 1 through 7 and be able to name the note that goes with 1 through 7. Or have her name a note and then you have to name the number. Again, this can be done driving down the road. I used to do it when I was going through college. I had an hour drive to college, and I would, in the key of D, F sharp is 3, C sharp is 7, G is 4, 5 is A, and now I don't have to think about that anymore. It's just internalized. I don't really have to practice it, but when I get into sometimes the weird keys, it's helpful for me to kind of go through it just to get it quicker, to get sharper, because we can always get sharper as musicians. Once you get that down, then you go to naming your chords. If you are a classical player and you don't know your chords, a very helpful routine for you would be to try to talk your worship leader into getting you the chord charts sometime before Saturday. Yeah, we've all played that, right? Where it's like Saturday night and you get the chord charts and you have no time to rehearse. If you can get them like the middle of the week, you can take and write down each chord. You can use them, if you're not good with chords, you can use the numbers that I gave you and the diagram that I gave you, and you just write out that if you've got a G, GBD, and get them all written either on the chart or make a flashcard for every chord that you're going to play that week. So take all five charts or however many songs you do, write out every single chord, no matter how weird it is, and then just flip through the flashcards until you've got every chord nailed. So I would encourage you to do that. It's a great way to practice your brain without an instrument. Ear practice, we talked about either downloading an app or going to the musictheory.net to train your ear. As you get more advanced, you can just listen to a song on the radio and start trying to name the intervals, especially the slower ones, and this is great for you. This can be, again, done driving down the road. If it's on your iPhone, you can sit there and just run it, and it'll tell you when you're right or wrong. I would encourage you, if you have to push buttons, though, to make sure you're driving and not to, that's my disclaimer. Don't get in a wreck because I told you to practice your ear practice. With the mental practice and the ear practice out of the way, before you just pick up and start playing a song, I would always try to do something technical. This could be even just for a few minutes. So scales is obviously the easy one to do. But that doesn't have to be just scales. I get a lot of growth out of playing single notes or even open strings, just to smooth out my bowing, or to you see so many people, and you probably know what bad habits you have in your hands. We all have bad habits, and if you don't actively fight them, every time you play, they will come back, or you just never got rid of them to start with. When I got tendonitis, I learned to get rid of a lot of bad habits because it would hurt too much to play. So it was great for me. It was God's gift to fixing a lot of my issues, and I don't have it anymore, but I got rid of all my problems. Most of them, not all of them. They still come back. So that just helps you get rid of your bad form. Tone shaping, this is one of the most often overlooked things among musicians. I would say on Sunday mornings is really concentrating on your tone. We're more interested in playing lots and lots of notes, or getting through, or just playing the right notes, and the tone becomes is no longer important. I would say it should be almost the most, as far as your music instrument is concerned, you pay attention more to your tone than the note. Sometimes even the wrong note can sound right if you have good tone. But if you have bad tone, the right note will sound wrong. So I would take some part of your practice, if it's even for 30 seconds, to do something technical that gets rid of your bad form, or it's very simple and warms you up, or that works through some sort of difficult key that you're not good in playing in, and then take the next 30 seconds to work on your tone, and then start your song practice. So I'm not, yes? Yeah, intonation is really just the pitch. I would say tone is more of like, in vocal, Louis Armstrong has a very distinct tone, as opposed to like an opera singer has a very distinct tone. They have very different tones, even though they sing lots of different pitches. Does that make sense? You know, like tone would be like bad tone on a violin. If you're too much pressure, you know, that would be bad tone. It doesn't really matter what pitch I'm playing, you know, if it's flat, sharp, whatever, it's just not nice to listen to. So I like to do just open. So for violinists out there, I like to do just an open string or just one finger pressed down. Don't change notes, and just work on making beautiful sound on one note. Because guess what? If you cannot make a beautiful sound on one note, or the very best sound on one note, how are you going to do when you start introducing other notes and doing all kinds of crazy things? It's not going to be great. Even if you're an advanced player, I'd be willing to bet that most advanced players who studied it on a collegiate-like level, their instructor had specific tonal exercises for them. And if it's been a while since you've been in college, or even if it's been 1 month since you've been out of college, you probably stopped doing those things because you didn't have somebody making you do them. So make yourself do them. They're very, very helpful and quite wonderful. All right. Song practice. Okay. Song practice. Learn the words. That may be the most important thing I say this entire class. If you don't learn the words, you will not know what to play. You will just play notes. Not only will learning the words help you decide what choices to make, but it will help you sing when you should not be playing. This morning, I found lots of opportunities not to play, just because there was no need to. And I wanted to play. The sinful side of me wanted to play. And the sinful side of us wants to play all the time because it's more fun to play than to not play. The sinful side of me is up there and there's a bunch of people out there and it's like, oh, cool. You know, I'm up here and I'm playing with cool musicians and I want to play something cool. So I want to play something all the time. So singing is not really very impressive with no mic. But that's not the worship side of me. And so learn the words. Please learn the words. That would be Bob Coughlin's number one piece of advice to any musician, is learn the words and learn to sing them and sing more. So that's the first part of song practice. Look over the lyrics. Play through the chord tones so you can see where the chords are actually moving through. Work on the transitions of a song. Those are often the stuff that messes up the most. And for a soloist, the transitions from one like verse to chorus, chorus to verse, are generally where you're the most important. It's really not that important for you to play over top of the words. You're just competing with the words. If you have a solo, this is how I would practice it. I would practice it until you can nail it. And then I would not say, well, I got it, and then walk away and expect for it to come across great on Sunday because it took you 8 times to get it. So what I like to do, if I really have something very, very difficult, is I'll play it until I got it. I will walk away, come back an hour later, and try to nail it on the first time. If I can't nail it on the first time, I don't have it. But nothing's worse for the worship leader than giving you a solo and then you tanking. So if you have a solo, actually work on it. And work on it till you nail it. All right, most brutal, record yourself. Very easy to do with an iPhone. If you don't have one, then get something else that can record you. It's very discouraging. I get great discouragement out of recording myself play because I get to hear everything I do wrong. Okay, preparing for Sunday. All right, worship is primary. So I would just ask that you really prepare your heart for Sunday. Pray through the songs. I like to download all the songs off of iTunes. I know that's a more expensive way. There's lots of great ways to get it for free. But most of us listen to it on Spotify for free and then buy a $4 latte on the way to Sunday morning. So it's a couple bucks. You know what? Just go ahead and buy it. It's on your iPod or whatever you have to listen to, and build the set list. And as soon as I get the set list, I download all of them. I listen to them over and over. And it's the only thing I listen to for the whole week. Minus, you know, every once in a while I listen to something else, but I really try to concentrate on just listening to those 5 songs. So the earlier your worship leader can get you the songs, the earlier you can build the set list and actually listen to them. And that's how I love to prepare that way. It's fantastic. Okay. Any questions? Any questions on that practice regimen? Yes. Sometimes I will run through the melody once or twice just to make sure if I get asked that I can. But the vocalists are doing the melody. And so there's really not a whole lot of reason to do it unless there's a chance you're going to get asked. I don't know. How often do you guys run through the melody if you're not playing the melody? Anybody? Some? You do? Yep. Yep. That's a good point. sometimes if your ear is not good enough to hear the natural harmony part, sometimes playing the melody will help you hear what notes not to play, because you really don't want to play the melody note because somebody's already doing the melody note. You know, chances are the bass player is playing the root, vocalist is playing the melody note, and you've got to find somewhere else to be. So what note is that? Well, if you play through the melody a few times, sometimes that can give you a little bit of awareness of what. Is that helpful? It depends on the style sometimes, too. Like Celtic stuff loves to put, like, all of them, everybody's playing melody, you know? So, you know, the bagpipe, well, God bless the bagpipe. It definitely needs blessing. It will be on the melody. The little, you know, little flute will be on the melody. The violin will be on the melody. Everybody's on the melody. So if you're doing some sort of style that likes that, like in Christ Alone, sometimes at the very end, it's very helpful to play the melody, even though you're not soloing. It just sounds kind of cool to go right into the melody at the very end. So there's nothing wrong with practicing the melody. It may be a good tool for you. Yes? Right, and that's great. That kind of brings up the point of staying out of the way of the other instruments. If the guitar players are in a certain octave, you know, and the piano players are, generally the guitar players and the pianos are kind of in the same octave and the bass is taken down low, sometimes going up high can be helpful, but sometimes going up high can be distracting. So you really just have to judge what you're doing. You know, it's really just kind of listening and saying, is this the right thing to do? Do I have everyone looking at me when I'm doing this? You really don't want to be a distraction. Sometimes people are just naturally distracted. There's somebody up there playing the violin or the bagpipe. I find the bagpipe very naturally distracting. And so that's just going to happen. Yes? I would say 90% of the time, you are given chords that are maybe in the right key and words. Like you'll get, it's in the key of G, capo 5. And I have a chance to print the chart for your key, but it's capo 5, so you got to translate. So you see what I'm saying? Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes it's that bad. Normally it's in the right key. You know, sometimes you don't get a chart at all. Sometimes you get, oh, we're going to do this song. I know we didn't plan on doing that one. I play all my worship stuff I do by ear. If you can't play by ear, I would start trying to learn, and it's a little bit daunting at first, but if you just give it a shot, you might be surprised. A lot of it's just people not wanting to learn play, or they're kind of scared of learning to play by ear. So I would encourage you to start trying to hear those intervals like I described, like the somewhere over the rainbow, like, oh, that's an eight, and it's an octave. Okay. For me, a helpful method for increasing my ear is I like to play along with TV shows, which is kind of weird, but you don't know what's going to be on there. Like, and I mean that musically. Some of them you just don't want to watch because you don't know what's going to be on there. But from a music standpoint, like certain shows, they just kind of put little pads in here and there. There's no melody that you're familiar with. So you just kind of have to, like, try to find the note that works, and it's total surprise every single time, which is...
I look at it as, like, a collection of notes, and even when more into classical music, some band teachers here understand that there's a collection of notes that you can use, like a pentatonic scale. So something that would be really helpful would be to listen to a song like Bless the Lord, figure out, okay, what's the melody, what number.
Yeah.
And figure out, okay, so for G major, writing that out and realizing, okay, what notes for my instrument, whether I'm a violin, fit,
for learning to play melodies just by ear, I would start with something simple, like Mary Had a Little Lamb. It's playing by ear is learning to talk, off the cuff. You know, like it would be the difference between looking and reading only what's on my page, or just speaking, and we can all speak. But each musical phrase you play or learn to play by ear is something that you internalize and becomes something that you know how to do from there on forward. It's kind of getting abstract. Most ear players have certain phrases that they use that are kind of like standard to them because they've learned them. And so you want to build your music vocabulary just kind of slowly, moving like little melodies, simple melodies at a time, and then just getting more and more advanced. And you might be surprised. Do you play by ear at all? Yeah. So there you go. Yes, it gets a lot easier. I mean, it really depends on what kind of what your goal is. You know. Sure. I would say most, and I don't want to box anybody in, but a lot of worship leaders are not as musically advanced as Bob Coughlin, and he won't give you that stuff. He's very, very knowledgeable. So he could tell you all kinds of great theory, and he could write all the charts out if he had that sort of time, but he won't do it for you. And so, well, yeah, Bach did. He was doing stuff that could not fit into a 1-4-5-6 type chord progression, I would say. So writing it out was probably the right idea. He's also working with a lot more musicians. He's a genius. And, yes, go ahead.
I was going to say that, in the beginning, it is demanding, and it seems like a lot, but it's similar to learning a foreign language. At first, you're just like, wait, what was that word? What was that phrase? Before long, you're speaking the language. You're speaking with a piano player. You're speaking with a vocalist. You're speaking with the word.
Yeah, I believe music is, no kidding, a language. And if you can start thinking of it that way, it's just learning phrases, it's learning words, it's learning how sentences fit together. And if you just kind of immerse into it, and it's not hours a day that I'm talking about, but it is having a plan of how you're going to learn it. But it's an act of service.
Yeah.
It's like, how can I serve the leader in his leading? If he's writing out charts for me, that's probably taking up most of his time. It's just easier for me to work on what I can work on to get better. And really, playing by ears, maybe I'm biased, but it's wonderful. It's very freeing because you don't really know what's going to happen, and you just play. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't work. That's okay, too. You know, it's not as okay as making it work, but it's just part of it. Yes, go ahead. Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Yep. And I was gonna cover some of that. I can cover that now since we're kind of talking about it. Is it everybody okay with me erasing this? Nobody's fixated on the circle of fists this whole time. Okay. All right. Let's get rid of it. So this might answer your question maybe even better. All right. Let's see what we got. So 10,000 reasons. Not in A. All right, what do we got? Let me pull it up in the G. So I will pull up the chart. Okay, so I wish I had this projected, but all right, so bless the Lord, O my soul. Is everybody familiar with 10,000 Reasons? Anybody not familiar with that song? It's pretty popular these days, so I picked it. So like what I'll do, we have C, E minor, D with an F sharp in the bass. For anybody who's not familiar with whatever that means, whatever's the slash, you're like, why is there a slash and why is there another thing there? That's not another F sharp chord there. That's just saying that you're going to play D chord and the F sharp is going to be the lowest. Doesn't mean that you have to play an F sharp. It just means that the bass player does. And I'm sorry, that goes to C, G, and then E minor is here. Okay, so let's do the first line real quick. Okay. Who knows what key we're in? How many people say G? How many people say C? Yeah, a couple. All right. It's tempting because the first chord is C. That doesn't mean that's what your key you're in. Okay. And this goes back to noting your numbers. First of all, there's no F sharp in the key of C. And then whenever you see G, a D, and a C in any order that's primary chords of a song, you're going to be in the key of G because that's the 1-4-5 of G. So there's your 1, there's your 4, and there's your 5, and there's your 6. And that's how you should look at that. This is all G major scale, and that's the numbers that they fit on. So we can go ahead, and if you're just not familiar with that, 4, 1, 5, and 6. Okay? All right. Okay. So it really depends on what you want to play here. Okay, sometimes I go, well, let me play a common tone that works through all of these chords, all right? Which you're not going to find one tone that necessarily works for all of these. But if I started on a G note, right, that's the 5 of C, that's the 1 of G. Now I get to here, and I'm playing a G still, you know. It's going to kind of work. Yeah, I will. All right, I just wanted to talk through it, so I'm not, yeah. And then if I stuck with a G here, that would be the 3rd of E minor. So that would be my thinking process. Like, okay, well, I'll suffer through this one that doesn't quite work because I know I'm going to a chord that it will. So it'll kind of relax. So if I can play a common tone, especially if I'm playing ambient, like lower stuff where I'm not, you know, the focus at all, I would try to find some sort of common tone where I'm not doing a whole lot. So start with... Yeah, of course. Did everybody hear that tension on that 3rd chord where it was like... But it relaxed when I got to the E minor. So I didn't have to play that chord tone. I made a conscious choice to say, I'm okay with the tension. I actually like the tension. I enjoy it. You get to where it's like a spicy food. Where you're like, oh, it hurts so good. And then when somebody plays something that's all like, I just put a little salt and pepper on it, you're like, ah, oh, it's so bland. So that's why I say start working your ear to hear those weird intervals to where you can start adding tension. You can add tension in your tone. You can add tension in your pitches. If you're playing with certain worship leaders, the tension works great. And with others, it just doesn't. So use it sparingly and use it when it sounds right. That's the best. It's like the stupidest advice you'll ever heard. If it sounds right, it is right, right? But it's so right. You're like, well, that makes sense, and I feel dumb for saying it out loud in a class. But that's basically what it boils down to. If it sounds right, it doesn't matter what your degree told you. It doesn't matter what I told you. If it sounds wrong, please don't play it. You know, if it sounds right, then it's the right choice. Okay, so that's one approach. I picked a common note. That worked all the way through. Let me show you what a bad choice would be. I will play the root of every single chord. Okay, so this is the easy way out to say, well, I'm definitely playing chord tones. Ready? That's that food with no salt or pepper on it, right? It's nothing to it. It's a way to start, but it's not a very good route, a very good way to go. It doesn't. It's all over the place. It's moving around. So let's say I want to change notes. I don't want to do roots, okay? So I will find a way that scales up or scales down sometimes. So let's do, how about, I don't like starting on the root. Okay, so I'll start on a G here. This is all part of my C chord, right? Remember we said C chord was C, E, G. So this is the fifth of my C chord. And I want to pick a... Well, let's not do that. That's not going to work out for me. Let's do E. What they're talking about, if certain musicians will allow you to do things that are awesome, and certain musicians will cage you into where you have no musical choices. Like play C, E, G. Okay. If I wanted to play the two, just hold on to that C, E, G. I can't do it because he's playing that third, he's playing that E right there. So play just 1 and 5. It's the same note. That D was what I primarily held on. Same note, but because he's not playing that middle note, it allows me to do some kind of cool things. Some of you are nodding your head, so you kind of understand already. If you're not nodding your head, you're kind of like, oh gosh, what's this guy talking about? It's, oh gosh, I'm getting on tangents. They're fun though. Well, yeah. Playing in tune is. If you're not tuning your instrument, we could have another talk. Okay. We've got 10 minutes. All right. Okay. One more example on this, and then we'll move on to just kind of how I build a song and try to answer questions. If you guys want to stay after, you're more than welcome. It's kind of warm in this room. If you want to open that door, that's fine, too. I'm just noticing it's warm, if anybody else is warm. Okay. So I'll go, this is the third, and I want to kind of scale, so I'll go down. So here's a D, right? That's the next note down in the scale, and that's the fifth of this chord. I could stay on a D here, no, I don't want to do that. So I'll maybe go down to D, C, B. No, it's not working out for me. I'll hold the D. So I'm just changing a little bit, okay? And I'm coming back. This note. So I didn't do a sustained note, but it works out for me to go ahead. Okay. So you can just start mapping out something other than the roots. Sometimes the root will work for you. And you can change little notes here. You can start working, try to scale up and down. I think you were asking me to like diatonic stuff. Diatonic stuff works really well in praise team music. I think you were trying to say, you know, how do you do like real crazy intervals? Weren't you?
Yeah, like you just kind of like do something like that, and then just eventually get to it by the chord change. Do you want to go somewhere else?
It depends. You know, I mean, I hate to say it depends because it doesn't really help you at all. But I love late. You know, as a soloist, I don't have to be right on top of the beat. And the jazz in me loves to be way behind the beat. I love to slide in. You know. Depending on the song, if it can't survive a slide, like it really needs to be classical or Celtic or something, then I'll just stab the note. But to me, that's part of my tone. My tone is like sliding into a note. The electric guitar is doing it, you know, so you want to fit with that. I think too often when we're classically trained, it's easy to say, this is the only tone that I can have. Heavy vibrato, because that's the vibrato that I know, which is great for classical and it works awesome. And then stabbing every single note. You wouldn't want a vocalist to sing to you like that on Sunday morning. Neither would you want your instrument to sing necessarily like that. So, like, I'll listen to Tanya, and I'll say, she's singing like this. I want my instrument to sound, I want it to sound like it helps with the song and doesn't compete with her. Yep, and we can demo. I kind of have a going-in game plan for all songs. And you should have a going-in game plan for all songs. This is part of something I was going to talk about, and I'm going to miss some of the things I wanted to talk about, so I apologize for that. But your going-in game plan should be how much you're going to play on every single song. Mine is, if the worship leader tells me nothing, and I'm just standing there, I will not play, I won't play for the intro, I won't play for the first verse, I won't play for the second, or the first chorus, and about halfway through the first verse, I will come, or the second verse, I'm sorry, I was a misspeak, I will come in, and I'll come in really subtle, so I'm not going to play some kind of crazy lick right there, I'm just going to come in with something very low volume, and kind of ease my way in so that the water's fine when I finally get there. Just stick my toe in. I would do something ambient, and that doesn't stick out. And then as the standard formula is that by the second chorus, you've gotten a little more aggressive. And so the bass is gonna be louder, the drum's gonna be a little bit louder, everybody's gonna be louder, and you can kind of ease your way in and start playing something more than just long notes. So I'll start maybe doing a fill here or a fill there. Generally the third verse kind of dies back down again, so you're back out again. Well, it doesn't matter, you know, because you're not really the focus anyways. And then the last chorus will come back strong again and you'll be out. That's my going in game plan, every single time. It's if we did no practice and we just went, that's what I would do. Yeah.
It's its own language, and it's the culture and context that we live in, and we want to be able to worship team and meet people where they're at. And so that's why we do that. And that's why we work on the soloing, and it's uncomfortable at times, but it really ends up blessing people.
Right.
That's what it's about.
Like, just to dispel a little bit of a myth, if you ever get the opportunity to play with Bob, you'll do all this listening the week before, you know, you'll download all the songs and you'll show up on Sunday and he's so genius that he'll have some sort of arrangement that's nothing like anything you've listened to. And so how do you respond to that? And so if you haven't been growing your ear and growing your versatility, you're going to go, I'm going to just not play on this one. Or you're going to play something that it's not going to be your best. So it's kind of what he's saying. Just be fluid, be adaptive. You know, the worship leader is going to go around for another chorus that you aren't ready for, you know, that's not even in the right place. And you're going to be like, got it. And you just make an adjustment. But have a going-in game plan. And if your worship leader never gives you a going-in game plan, you've got one. And then if you go Sunday after Sunday after Sunday with nothing, then maybe talk to him about, like, how to help you or where he wants you to play. How many people have a worship leader that tells them where they want you to play? That's good. Yeah. How many people like that? Yes. It depends. Yeah, right? It depends. Sometimes that helps you with your creativity. Sometimes that hurts your creativity. So be ready to make a suggestion if you think what they have for you is not right. All right, let's try to get through a demo. Did anybody bring an instrument? Does anyone want to play? Yeah, okay. Well, let's do that then. You want to come up? Okay. And you want to come up? While they're getting their instruments ready, just open the floor for questions. Like I said, we can go longer if you guys want to go longer, if there are questions that you want answered. What do you have? Yes. To mic my violin? Okay, yeah, that's one thing I wanted to talk about. Okay, I have a pickup on this violin, and it's not mic'd right now. I'm not plugged in. It's an LR Bags pickup. Yamaha makes a great pickup that I would recommend. But if you're going to put a pickup on your violin, all you violin players, please, please, please get a preamp. Do not plug it directly into the system. It will sound absolutely awful, no matter how much you spend on the pickup. So I use an LR Bags Venue preamp, but you can use lesser models, and that's just fine. A pickup, does everyone know? A pickup is just the like a little wire that goes into my bridge. A preamp adjusts your sound and your tone. So like this pickup would sound really tinny and really harsh. So the preamp kind of like mellows me out. If I need lows added, it's like, you know, like when you're adjusting your radio to sound that it's very best, like you'd bring the bass up and the treble down. Oh yeah, that's the way I like to listen to music. That's what your preamp does, okay? Say again? Yes. Yeah, a lot of times, especially with the pickups that aren't, like some guitar pickups have a battery in them that makes them a little more robust. Most violin pickups do not, because you don't really want to put a battery on your violin. The preamp will give you a little kind of a boost to get past that no battery sound, which is called a passive pickup. Yes? Yes, absolutely. I'll write that on the board. Don't let me forget. Actually, you want to write the contact information on the board? I finish up. One thing I wanted to say that I really just over the last few years, especially, I was like a purist acoustic kind of guy. I only wanted to play acoustic instruments. I would plug in, like, but it would be for an acoustic sound. I started finding that, especially with smaller praise teams, it didn't always serve as I could serve. I have a lot of effects pedals now, which is a complete departure from where I was 2 years ago. And I have an electric violin. Again, I would have scoffed and said heresy and all kinds of things. But it's really helped me because I can do, if I don't have a synth player, I can be the synth player. If it needs a cello part, I have pedals that can make me sound like a cello. I have pedals that can make me sound like a whole orchestra, not an actual orchestra that I would record, but and from a praise team setting, it gives me lots of extra sounds. I was using a reasonable amount of them this morning, but not as much as I may use in a very small setting. Got to be kind of careful. If you're at all interested in coming up and talking about the pedals after class to see what I have or how I think through, I'll be happy to demo the electric violin. You can try the electric violin if you're a violin player, and I can show you kind of how I think through that process too. So I would encourage you, no matter what instrument you play, start thinking outside of the box. Like start thinking in ways that aren't the way you learned from the teacher that you took from, or the violin can only do this, it can only serve in this way. That's not necessarily true. It can be a lot of fun to do some other things. So I'd be happy to show you any of that. Yeah, that should be fine. And you can find me on Facebook. But yeah, you can hit me up an email. And we should definitely get that. Yeah. Any more questions while they're tuning? Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Actually, I learned to play the electric guitar just because I wanted to, and I bought all the pedals, and then one day I thought, huh, I wonder if this would sound like through a violin. So it wasn't a conscious like effort that I made, and I kind of learned to use them by playing the electric guitar, and then... And that helped serve me too. Playing extra instruments, even if you're not that good at them, really helps you to learn how to use your instrument in different ways. Like, there are times when I play my violin like a guitarist because I can play guitar, but I wouldn't know how to do that sound. I'm not advocating that you go learn every instrument to copy them, but it can be helpful for you if you've kind of stagnated and you're kind of like, I'm kind of sick. Sometimes it gets tired of hearing the violin. It's like, I just got to hear something else. You know, I don't want six songs in a row a violin. So I learned other instruments just because it gives the congregation a break from legato all the time. So, okay. All right. Yeah. And, you know, ordinarily you probably like wouldn't play on the very first verse, but just for time's sake and just kind of hear how you feel, then just give kind of an intro and you feel free to, and Tanya will sing, and feel free to accompany. Key of G, do you need a chart? Okay. That again, okay? Yes, no, that's fine. I don't have a problem with the number of notes. It was good. I would avoid the note G because it is the tonic, where the tonic is the root of the scale, and you come back to it, and that's where, as you're growing your ear, that's the easiest note to find, you know, and so you come back to it because it's very safe. But try not to end your phrases on G. And try not to maybe start them on G. And it might be a little bit uncomfortable. The other thing I would suggest is, you don't have the words to look at, so I'm not faulting you there, but the sun comes up, it's a new day dawning, right? I would pick a note that lifts you right there. So start, I know it's not an A chord, it's a G chord right there. Start on an A, which is the two, right? And a two is always a lifting note, and that gives you, the sun comes up, it's a new day dawning. And so like when I'm thinking through that, I'm like, okay, when I wake up, I have quiet time. Sun comes up. It's a new day dawning. I'm at a moment of tension right there. Okay? It's time to sing your song again. Well, that's the moment that I would come down and release. So I would hold some sort of tension note, like a two. And that's not terrible. That's not a ton of tension. But when it's time to sing your song again, I would come down into something that matches the chords a little bit better. So try just starting on an A and try avoiding G some. Now, I'm not saying you can't play it, but just try to stay away from it some. So, but now you're conscious of it, you know, and it probably almost like, it's like affects you. You're like, oh gosh, I can't use it. Now what do I do? You know? So I would say in your practice, I would say, okay, well, the song's in this key. I'm going to solo with the album and I am going to play something that's just uncomfortable for me and find a comfort, and you'll record yourself and you'll start hearing it. You're like, oh man, I do come back to that. When you go to a recording studio, they will not let you do that. They'll be like, oh no, you ended like every phrase on this. Or you ended one phrase like 16 measures ago on that, so you can't do it again. You know, you're like, oh. And recording is brutal. I don't know if you've ever done it before, but it like hurts your feelings if you haven't done it. It's great for you. It's you grow so much from it. It's the best kind of playing you can do. So if you get the opportunity to do it, I would definitely do it. Okay. Great. Thank you. Ready? Do you want to do the chorus, since we already kind of talked about the verse? Okay. You need a chart? Would you like a chart? Bless the Lord. Yep, starts on a G. I've got it right here. Got it on song, courtesy of Chris Scott. Nope, that's an A. We'll do this one. It starts on a C chord. There you go. Let me be singing when the evening comes. Okay, so they're going right here. And then they're going to go to the chorus. Thank you. Yeah. Okay. And bear in mind, some of it is you got one little chorus to play, so you're going to play so you can be heard. I would, let's try it again, and try to play less. So leave a space. Bless the Lord, oh my soul, be oh my soul, like in between, yeah, fills. And they don't have to be like mirror type, like three or four notes every single time. Sometimes it could just be a sustained note, like once she hits her last note, but try to leave a space and then come in. Often when you're playing by ear and your ear is still kind of growing, it's more comfortable to always play because it's easier to hear your next note if you've already got a note playing, which is why I advocate doing the interval training in your ear so that you can stop and not play and know what you'd want your next note to go to. Does that make sense to everybody? Like when you're noodling, you can noodle all day long and you can find the next note because you're right next to a note that's going to work. Herbie Hancock says you're only a half step off from a note that works all the time. You know, so if you play a wrong note, move a half step, you're going to get there, right? It's going to work.
Ask the vocalist too. It's like, hey, is that all right? Because I mean, if they're a diva, they're going to let you know. But if they're not, you know, pat up.
Sure.
That's
how we are. Yeah.
So you have to be walking all over.
She tells me, but she's very comfortable telling me.
I always say that, you know, I'm not important, but the words that are coming out of my mouth are the most important part of a worship song. And if he's noodling all over it and covering up, it's
no,
not
she says he. She's pointed right at me.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Try giving a space to the words and then filling in between. Yeah, let's try it again. So from the same spot, let me be singing.
Like after you're giving depth. The bassoon gives that depth. And you're giving depth to the words, definitely. Where the flute flautist is giving, you know, a twinkle to the words.
Yeah. Sorry. Go ahead. Let's try it again. What you did by stopping there and letting the words just go. That was perfect. Yes, yeah, that actually brings up a good point. It's not that you don't have to completely stop playing, but you heard what she did there. There were moments when it kind of helped her ear to have something going. And it actually, with just a pianist and an oboe, you may want to play more. You know, you want to be like what you're doing. And that coming down soft gave the words a rise and didn't compete with them. And then there was something to do. So your volume change was great. That was.
I'm always scared to come.
Yep. I know what you're feeling. I mean, like sometimes on the violin, your very first note, it's kind of like, you know, and just kind of setting your bow down can be a real problematic, which is why I love this volume pedal, because I can just put my, and bring it slowly up, which is awesome. Right. Yes.
We're all fitting in together, all the musicians, the spaces in between my fingers, we're supposed to fit in together. But it's finding those spaces that are so difficult.
Right.
And
it's not filling every space. Not every space is meant to be filled. Again, I cannot advocate to you enough that not playing is sometimes the very best thing you can do. You just, it was great having her there this morning because I knew there was at least one person that would tell me if I played too many notes, you know? So I knew I was going to be accountable. She's my accountability partner for note playing. Yeah, well, I don't know. Sometimes he doesn't tell me. It's like, yeah, he would tell me in practice. He'll tell me in practice, okay, a little bit less, a little bit less. But Tanya will be, she'll be nice and honest with me. More honest than nice. No, I'm just kidding. Yes, she is. She's very helpful. And it really helps me. It really does. It very much helps me to have somebody like that who can be honest and say, yeah, man, take a break. Go ahead. Yes. That's okay. This was the last section I was going to cover, was just kind of worshiping together. Yeah. Well, let me just 2 seconds. If you're going to play with another soloist, you've got to communicate with them. Sometimes that communication is going to be before you play the song, and sometimes it's going to be with the worship leader to say, that's why it's so important for the worship leader to kind of map out who's playing what when. What happens to me a lot is that nothing is communicated, and then somebody who hasn't figured out the not playing all the time thing yet will play all the time, and I will not play generally. I'll just say, well, if I play here, it will just be too much going on. And rather than compete with the worship, I'll just not play. So that's why if you're a worship leader, it's essential that if you have two soloists, even if it's an electric guitarist and any other soloist, violinist, oboe, that you work out who is going to be doing fills or who is going to be the solo. Like, oboe is going to be primary this time. You on the electric guitar are just going to be ambient. You're not going to do fills. Or you're going to have fills on the first verse, you're going to have fills on the second verse. If the worship leader doesn't do that, then I try to, if there's enough time, to talk to that person and say, hey man, you want to divvy this up, and you got to be real diplomatic about it, because if you cause like bitterness and something weird, because you know artists are sensitive, we're sensitive people, then sometimes the worship goes away altogether because something weird has been introduced. So it's like I said, it's a lot of times I just won't play, and that's okay. I'm just say, yeah, just sing. That's sure, yeah. Not to do. Yeah. Okay. Okay. That's exaggerated, but sometimes that's not very far from what happens. I've played with other classical violinists that it was just like, it doesn't have to, you know, it's a lot of notes, you know, and I can't play. I'm like, and it's not, you know, I just will move. I'm like, you know what, you go ahead, and that's fine, and I'm not okay with that, so. Depends on the song, you know. If it's a crazy solo song, you know, then put the crazy solo in there. And every once in a while I'll get licensed to do that. Hey, Gabe, do something crazy right here. Got it. I'll do something crazy. If I don't get that clear to do something crazy thing, I don't do anything crazy. Yeah.
I rarely do anything like that. Unless you're specifically called for it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, so true. Yep, and you don't want to do that. I think some of it comes from sometimes our only musical outlet is Sunday morning, you know, for most of us, because we work regular jobs, you know, and we don't have time to go play at Saturday night at some place. Yeah, absolutely. But it really depends, because even then sometimes you can take the like a bridge should still be a time of prayer and reflection, to where the words have stopped and people are meditating on the words they're just saying. So what I don't want them to do is go, we just sang about Christ and what he gave to us, and cool, there's a violin solo, that sounds awesome. I don't want that. So it just depends. I try to be subtle. I really do. I want to be subtle as often as I can. And I only do something crazy when somebody says this needs something crazy. And sometimes that's just adding intensity. So maybe it's an intense moment in the song where you're speaking specifically about humanity and the sin, and you want something really dark and kind of intense there to draw. It's a vehicle. you want to draw intensity to that tense moment, and you want to draw release in when they're singing about grace. That's the way I think through. Yeah. If you're in a band like Sojourn, you're going to do some work in that band, because that's the way they play. That's okay. But most praise teams are not Sojourn.
The context, that's their context. So whatever your community is,
yeah.
Learn what that context is.
Yeah. Overplaying is a real common practice, though. So.
There's
an interlude. Yeah. Again, it depends. And I hate that answer when people give it to me, but it really just depends. So, you know, if it sounds right for you to do something ornate there, then I would say yes. Depends on someone else. Yeah. Yeah, get some opinions. Like, hey, was that, you know, if you got a whole bunch of people saying that was a ridiculous oboe solo you took there, you may, it's like, well, you know, and it's fine for people to compliment you. It's great. You should respond graciously. But sometimes when I get too many compliments, sometimes I start feeling like, I overdid the old violin solo thing there.
Can we try and press alone to just do like the chorus and then do that weird thing where it goes to like flat seven?
Okay. Put me on the spot. Yeah. Oh, the pog? Yeah. Yeah, it's fine. You can stop. If you want to stop recording, it's fine, whoever's doing the recording. But it's up to you. If you're ready to go. And anybody who's tired of listening to me is more than welcome to. Oh, yeah. All right. You shouldn't. Yeah. A lot of people are transitioning to iPad charts. I still really like paper charts because it allows you to write on your stuff. Yeah. Chris has got it all down. He's got all the answers. Okay, let's see. No octave pedal. So I've got a delay on that and some reverb. This is the so I do like subtle nuance lower ends. You don't want to, the pog has kind of have a very organ like sound if you bring it up too high. So I just bring a little bit of lows here and there, and it kind of gives me like a big depth. There's also a 5-string violin, which took me a little bit learning how to use, but it allows me to do the viola parts too, which is kind of fun, and to do the violin parts if I want to. So, thank you.
something like that there. And then maybe you can just come out. Let her sing. If I want to do something orchestral, I'll go like, these kind of little things are fun.
I just kind of, if you listen to, I use lots of dynamics. So it's kind of like what you were doing there, where you're kind of like, yeah, you with the first time you played, it was like one volume. And the second time you played, you went to zero, and you kind of swell in. That's fantastic, because it sneaks up on people. They don't really notice it. It just kind of like puts a little wave in there, and it's wonderful. Love dynamics. Yeah. Tone and dynamics are generally the first thing that go when you're trying to play by ear and you're working, like you're actively working to play by ear. That's why I say, I know that the theory stuff I taught in the beginning was boring, but if you have it, you're not working, you're just speaking. And then you go, okay, well, I know how to play by ear. That's easy for me to do. Now let me focus on the feeling. And then that's all I do, is I focus on, how does this feel? How does it feel to go to this pitch? How does it feel for me to play loud or soft or grow in? I love swells.
You know,
in
something called layering, you know, and you've got a bigger worship team, a musicians
visiting. Sure. The bigger your team is, the less you play as a soloist, generally speaking, because you'll start with a piano, then you'll add a guitar, and the bass and the drums will come in, and you don't really just start with a violin, you know, or a solo. You kind of just sprinkle in. So, all right. Anything else from anybody? We're starting to dwindle down. Stragglers. Yep. Thank you. Sure, absolutely. No, we're over time anyways. This is a T.F. Barrett. I got this one for really cheap. It is because the guy who had it didn't know what it was.
I was looking online and like Yamaha, and I was thinking it might be fun to get one.
Yamahas are pretty decent.